Those of you who have been out to the Walk for Life counter-protests in recent years have probably noticed that the Christian right can turn out more people than we can. Ever wonder why? Well, Andy Smith, Native American feminist intellectual and master of divinity, has a theory. The Christian right is more fun than the U.S. left. Here's part of a talk that Andy gave at the Critical Resistance Conference on the prison industrial complex last year. In it, she really ties together a lot of the issues we've just been discussing with abortion rights activists.
So I had the misfortune of having to go to a lot of Christian right conferences, and what I've noticed is that even Republicans all recognize that prisons don't work and that they're horrible places. So we have to ask ourselves, why do we still have them when everybody knows this? And the key is that prisons seem natural. They seem like they're the only things that we can do. So when we talk about prison abolition, we have to ask ourselves, how did prisons come to seem to be natural? Well, the prison industrial complex is not just some random isolated institution that ran amok. It's the enforcement arm of a settler colonial state form of governance based on violence and domination. So in dismantling the prison industrial complex, we have to ask ourselves, how did governing ourselves based on violence and domination come to seem natural? It came to seem natural because of the systematic genocide of indigenous peoples on this land, because Native peoples have memories of different forms of governance that were based on principles of mutual respect and responsibility, were not patriarchal, and not coincidentally didn't have prisons, right? So therefore, a struggle against the prison industrial complex must become a struggle against settler colonialism, because these memories are the radical critique of the present. If we lived differently before, we can live differently now. So it is time to do a radical remembering of the future, to think of not only tearing down prison walls, but to create alternative forms of governance in this country that are informed by these principles of indigenous nationhood, where we can be self-determining without trying to create a nation state in which the elites rule everybody else on the principles of domination, where we create these ethnic bounded states where we're in, you're out, screw the rest of the world, but instead understand we can be self-determining while recognizing we're part of a larger global world and we're responsible for creation as well. So two key principles that come to mind in thinking of these alternative governance systems is, one, we need a different relationship to land. Instead of thinking of land as a commodity that can be controlled and owned by us, land is something we all need to be responsible for. Patricia Montour Angus puts it this way. Aboriginal peoples maintain a close relationship with the land, but it is not about control of the land. Earth is mother and she nurtures us all. It is the human race that is dependent on the earth and not vice versa. Sovereignty is defined as my right to be responsible and requires a relationship with territory and not a relationship based on control of the territory. What must be understood then is that the Aboriginal quest to have our sovereignty respected is really a request to be responsible. I don't know of anywhere else in the world where a group of people have had to fight so hard to be responsible. The second principle is that we need to understand that heteropatriarchy is the building block of the settler colonial state. So what we are concerned about is not simply the status of women or LGBT communities in the prison system, but how is heteropatriarchy a central logic that keeps settler colonialism together? When we look at the history of the colonization of Native peoples, we saw that colonists said, we will never be able to dominate Native peoples until Native men start treating Native women the way white men treat white women. That is why through boarding schools and other such policies, they had to instill patriarchy into our communities, because patriarchy is what naturalizes social hierarchy. That is why massacres were always accompanied with rape and sexual mutilation, because these policies were designed to render Native peoples as inherently rapable, and by extension, our lands inherently invadable and our resources inherently extractable. So, if we do not get serious about ending heteropatriarchy, we are not serious about ending white supremacy or settler colonialism. So then, in trying to develop this positive project of creating alternative governance systems that would not have a prison industrial complex, there are some organizing strategies we might want to consider. One is, we might want to get out of this politics of recognition, as Glenn Coulthard calls it, where instead of building with each other and recognizing each other, we go to power and say, gee, kind sirs, we've been oppressed. Will you please free us? We see this particularly in the nonprofit industrial complex, where we seek recognition from the funders rather than our communities. To illustrate this, I will tell you a sad tale of the co-optation of the anti-violence movement. Women are starting to organize around violence. It's like, what can you do? Do you need to stay in my basement? How can we confront perpetrators? What can we do to end violence ourselves? But the state, being the sneaky thing that it is, comes in and says, little ladies, it looks like you all have a problem with violence. Why don't we give you a federal grant to solve that problem? Of course, when you accept our grant, you accept all the stipulations that go with this grant. And we are not going to fund any unseemly rabble-rousing activities. No, we think the problem is that survivors are sick, and they need to be cured with somebody with a PhD or an MSW. Survivors cannot organize on their own behalf. They are clients who need services. In addition, the only strategies we will fund are those that work with the criminal justice system, because, as it so happens, we are building up the prison industrial complex, and we would like to co-opt your feminist rhetoric to support our repressive anti-crime agenda. So before you know it, we have anti-violence programs located in police departments, acting as arms of the state, and we now think that the Violence Against Women Office in the Department of Justice is part of our movement. Right. So, therefore, it becomes very important for us to not mistake the strategies for the goals so that we don't get so easily co-opted. To give you one illustration, I was at a domestic violence conference. They asked us, what would you like to see in the movement in the next 10 years? And everybody said, more battered women's shelters, more hotlines, and no one said, no violence. We had forgotten why we were here. And so then two more principles. I think one problem we've had with the nonprofit industrial complex, in addition to many other problems, is that it gets us very wedded into strategies because we get funded for a certain strategy. And then when it doesn't work, we have to tell them it did work so we get funded again. And then we tell everybody else it worked so they believe us. They do the same thing, and even though it fails, they tell everybody else it worked. And then we proliferate disaster instead of revolution. What we might want to do instead is develop a politics of humility. If we really knew how to end global oppression, we would have done it by now.
Thank you.
Right. So let's try the revolution through trial and error. Let's do what we can do, learn from our mistakes, and share this information, and so we can collectively go forward instead of being wedded to strategies that don't work and keep us in the past. And then finally, I think it's very important to build a fun revolution, because as it turns out, ending global oppression is not as easy as it looks. I go to these Promise Keepers conferences, and they're so much fun. They got singing and dancing and everything. And if poor Stan has a problem with prostitution, they don't yell at him. They say, we're going to pray for you to help you be the person you want to be. Well, when I go to our meetings, that the chairs are uncomfortable, there's no food, they last for 4 hours, and we yell at each other for being counter-revolutionary, and then we wonder why nobody wants to join, right? So we simply can't wait to have fun. We need to build a movement that's so much fun that everybody can't wait to join. I'll end with a quote from one Native activist who puts it this way. You can't win a revolution on your own, and we are about nothing short of a revolution. Anything else is simply not worth our time. Thank you.
That was Professor Andy Smith speaking at the Critical Resistance 10 conference last fall in Oakland. Smith is author of Conquest, Sexual Violence and American Indian Genocide, as well as Native Americans and the Christian Right, The Gendered Politics of Unlikely Alliances. Andy was also co-editor of The Revolution Will Not Be Funded, From Insight, Women of Color Against Violence.